gather round, gather round. Witness the memoirs of 5'9 being read as he sees it fit. Police sirens behind him while he's driving instantly causes butterflies in his stomach, even though he's legit.
Now, brothers and sisters, they have not stopped.
It's about to hit the fan. What is it? Shit's getting deep in here. I mean, like, thick.
Just another day in my reformed life, my unreformed.
Happy New Year and welcome back to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com, pro football focused fantasy football contributor, and all-around football genius.
Okay.
I'm joined by my co-host, Brian.
I'll just consider myself a football person.
You're a football person, but not a football player.
No. Just a football person.
Just a football person. Only in certain circles am I considered a football genius. The circles that surround my mom's apartment.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So we're back here on the podcast after a couple-week hiatus. The holidays making it hard to schedule a podcast around them. But we're back.
Well, especially because, like, all the eves were lining up on Wednesdays, and that's our typical, you know, recording day. And so.
Yeah, just, you know, it makes things complicated. So took a couple weeks off. They were eventful couple of weeks, obviously. Things such as the Jay Cutler, but then the Jimmy Clausen, but then the Jay Cutler. A lot of strange things happened to round out the NFL season. And then we headed into, of course, the first week of the playoffs, the wild card round.
The rise and fall of Johnny Manziel.
The rise and fall of Johnny Manziel. So, yeah, we saw the first week of the playoffs, of course, and we had Black Monday, and there are coaching searches fervently underway around the National Football League. So we're going to touch on both of those things before we, of course, make our picks for the divisional round of the playoffs. Let's start with the first round of the playoffs here. Let's start with that wild card round. It was wild, to say the least.
It was pretty wild. There was, although I think a lot of people would agree that the it got off to a slow start in Charlotte, and it was that was kind of a weird game. It was somewhat sluggish, and while there was, you know, some good play here and there, it mostly seemed like a collection of bad.
Yeah, it was as to be expected. The Carolina Panthers, of course, winning their division, the NFC South, with a losing record. However, winning the last four of their games. Gaining a little bit of momentum. The Arizona Cardinals, of course, being forced to start third-string quarterback Ryan Lindley, who just a few weeks prior was not even in the National Football League. You know, the Carolina Panthers, they look good in this game. Obviously, the defense up against a third-string quarterback, that's always going to amplify a first-string defense's efficacy. Cam Newton, that running game, that offense has been getting better over the previous four wins. Looked also fairly sharp against a Cardinals defense that has slowed down in recent weeks and dealt with some injuries.
He looked fairly sharp, but he looked he looked so banged up. I mean, there were so many times
he looked very banged up. He was,
you're like, watching the game, yeah, and that's
grimacing in pain.
I didn't want to just say that, you know, it was bad play or anything like that, but like,
no,
there was,
I mean, he's out there with two broken,
right,
you know,
yeah,
transverse,
exactly,
processes in,
you
his back.
You got to give credit for that, but like, it also didn't necessarily lead to, you know, the most enthralling, you know, NFL playoff game to watch.
No, but the outcome was expected. You know, if this was the Arizona Cardinals with Carson Palmer under center, I would think I would be more surprised with Arizona going out to Carolina and losing that game. But when you have a third string quarterback, and that's the thing. You look at Twitter when games are going, and everybody's just destroying poor Ryan Lindley.
Right.
But what would you expect from a third string quarterback for any team? And I know a lot of people bounce back saying, oh, you know, well, Ohio State versus Alabama, but that's college, that's apples to oranges. That's also Urban Meyer's quarterback collection, which he hoards them obsessively. But I mean, if the Steelers had to start Landry Jones, their third string quarterback, you wouldn't get anything much better. I mean, you're expecting all of a sudden first string quarterback play out of a third string quarterback just because it's a playoff game, and that those things, there's no correlation.
If you get anything good out of a third string quarterback in a situation like that, it's an exception, not a norm.
Exactly.
You know,
That's the most intense trial by fire, a third-string quarterback.
It's tough to expect anything out of a third-string quarterback, especially on a huge stage like that. So.
Especially a third-string quarterback.
I thought the guy actually played kind of all right for parts of the game, considering.
As best as can be considered.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think it was, you know, good overall.
Considering the situation. So that to me wasn't a shocking outcome. I was a bit surprised, I will say, about Baltimore going into Pittsburgh and beating the Steelers. Now, the Steelers did not have Le'Veon Bell. And Le'Veon Bell has been their do-it-all running back all year, not just running the ball, catching the ball, blocking in pass protection. So, obviously, his services were going to be missed. Mm-hmm. You got a rookie in Dre Archer. You've got Josh Norris. And then the recently signed Ben Tate. And you put those three guys together, and they're not even half of a Le'Veon Bell.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of talent or experience level. But I just didn't realize exactly how much they were going to miss him. They couldn't run the ball. It would probably be tough to run the ball anyway with Bell against the Ravens because the Ravens have a top four rushing defense. But at least Bell's presence out there means that they have to concern themselves with the run.
Well, plus they a big part of Bell's game this year was receiving the ball, catching it out on the wing, and taking off and, you know, not dealing with that.
And creating yards after the catch. Because he's
the meat of the front of the defense.
Right, he's the Steelers' yards after the catch leader as a receiver.
And so, like, just that threat or at least being able to do that a couple times would have freed things up in the defensive backfield, I think. So that way they could have done a little bit better on the passing game. But that was the most surprising part. It was not that the Steelers had a hard time running. It was what a difficult time they had passing.
But it also makes sense because the Ravens did their part to make the Steelers a one-dimensional team,
sure.
Which was aided, of course, by Bell not being out there.
Sure.
And they were able to use that formidable pass rush. They had 49 sacks in the regular season. They sacked Ben Roethlisberger 5 times in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis Dumervil in particular. And Terrell Suggs didn't get a sack, but he was creating tons of pressure. I was surprised with that secondary kind of holding up, doing some bend but don't break kind of business out there. Antonio Brown...
The pass rush certainly helps too.
I mean, Antonio Brown's gonna break some stuff open. He had over 100 receiving yards in that game. That's something you cannot.
He's
stop.
Gonna get his, yeah.
But
exactly.
The point is stopping the Steelers in the red zone, which the Ravens were masterful at.
Mm-hmm.
There was no run game that they even had to respect when you have two rookies and the shadow of Ben Tate out there. So the Ravens, you know, they roll on. Now we got Joe Flacco, 13 touchdown passes to 0 interceptions in the playoffs, dating back to their Super Bowl run of a couple years back.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive. It's going to be quite a test for the Ravens this week going to Foxborough to face the Patriots. But they beat them in the AFC Championship game en route to that Super Bowl, and it's nothing they're afraid of. So.
Right.
That's going to be an interesting matchup
now, the
scheduled
Ravens,
for this
the
Saturday.
Ravens, honestly, I thought whoever won that game was going to be like a dark horse to take the division or take the conference even. You know
I
what
agree.
I mean? Just because either one of those can be dangerous in the playoffs.
They
as
know
we
what
saw,
it takes.
It was a good game. And even though the Steelers were missing a vital weapon, you know, the Ravens certainly played well enough to win that game. And they look formidable for the Patriots, so as we'll discuss after a bit.
Also, another AFC North team, 3 AFC North teams out of 6 AFC seeds in the playoffs. Cincinnati Bengals went to Indianapolis and took on the Colts.
Yeah.
And, I don't want to say Dalton's going to Dalton, 26-10 loss. You know, they were without Jermaine Gresham, the tight end, and, of course, A.J. Green, Andy Dalton's most favored receiving target. You take those two guys away, and it's going to be hard for Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, with the Indianapolis Colts, you can run against them. If you commit to a power-running offense, you can grind that defense down. And so that's what I figured when you have Hugh Jackson as the offensive coordinator, someone who's run-minded, the Bengals offense finally kind of embracing that run-first identity over the past final weeks of the season, that especially Jeremy Hill with a little bit of Giovanni Bernard would really get the upper hand on the Colts, but that was not the case. In fact, the Bengals decided to abandon the run, put the game on offense in Andy Dalton's hands with his cobbled together group of receivers, and again, no touchdowns from Andy Dalton. Another bad day, another loss, 4 straight one and dones for the Cincinnati Bengals. Again, the defense there not playing very well, missing a lot of tackles, not getting any pressure, 20 sacks on the regular season, only 1 on Andrew Luck last week. So clearly every moving part of the Bengals failed their team in terms of trying to win this game. But, of course, the fingers are going to get pointed at Andy Dalton.
The fingers are going to get pointed at Andy Dalton, but I'd say that if anything, he was a little bit better in this playoff game than he's been in previous big games, and they certainly wouldn't have won because of him based on the way he played. But they also didn't lose solely because of him. And there was it was a team effort to get to that loss. And where in the past, I think that you know the his meltdown was kind of you know led the way for the team to meltdown. Where this was just kind of like everybody was just you know not in it.
Everybody melted down, but I'm hesitant to say that Dalton had a good game. He completed 18 of 35 for only 155 yards. That's 4.4 yards per completion.
I
no
didn't
touchdowns.
Say he had a good game.
No interceptions. A lost fumble, and of course, three sacks. While he was facing pressure all day, being blitzed all day, which is the Andy Dalton kryptonite,
sure.
The blitz.
Sure.
Even against you know that offensive line was relatively healthy.
But they also abandoned the run in the second half.
They abandoned the run before the second half.
Before the second half.
They only ran.
Why? I mean, even in the little bit of running that they did, they were successful, right? I mean, they had
14 times in the first half for 4.6 yards, but then they ultimately only ran 21 times and still averaged 5.2 yards on
it. Yeah, that's all I'm saying is like you have a quarterback who's had problems in big games. You know, you have a quarterback who specifically in the playoffs hasn't done well, and
he's out two weapons,
and he's without two receivers. So what is the good reason for abandoning the run game in that situation?
Especially because you know that it's practically a guaranteed win if you establish the run early against this Colts defense and run 40 to 50 times in a game.
And they have two competent runners.
Yes, they have two competent running backs. And then, they have a third, too, in Rex Burkhead, who they were splitting out wide.
They were even using him early, too. We got Red as a receiver.
As a receiver. but I also don't want to make the excuses for Andy Dalton about Green and Gresham not being out there or the run game not helping him, only because he's had games like this or worse in the postseason with everybody healthy, with Marvin Jones healthy, with everybody healthy. He's performed like this or worse in the postseason, directly leading the Bengals to a loss. He wasn't the only reason they lost this game, but he provided no help.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's mainly what I'm saying is that there's been times in the past where it's looked like everything else was there, and quarterback
absolutely.
Fail, team loses.
Absolutely,
this was everybody not doing it. Everybody, and
true.
The more I think about it, the more I want to put this in. Don't get me wrong. I think Hugh's good, and I think Hugh's done a good job there. But the more and more I think about it, the more this goes on Hugh, because I don't care what the score is. If your path to success is through your running backs, you keep running the ball.
Exactly, and that's something that Hugh
and
Jackson
take pressure off. Andy
that's
Dalton.
Something that Hugh Jackson stressed from the moment that he took this job, that they were going to be a power running offense, run first, make
it
easier.
Because he knew who Andy Dalton was.
Make it easier on Dalton, and we've seen this all season long in these situations where you think that they should stick with the run regardless of the score, and they abandon it.
Yeah,
and that was something that was a hallmark, especially of like the first 8 to 10 Bengals games on the season.
Yeah,
they started turning away from that. So I thought, okay, this is the perfect time with these two receivers out for Hugh to really do that run game thing that he wants to do and stick with it.
Yeah.
And then they run the ball 21 times.
14 in the first half. I don't know.
Yeah, 7 runs in the second half.
Anyway.
So, I mean, they stabbed themselves in the foot on so many levels in that loss. Obviously, the scrutiny on Andy Dalton gets even hotter. 0-4 is never a good look. This is the first time in the modern era a quarterback, a team, has lost their first, you know.
You can't brush over the fact that this team was just abysmal with their pass rush.
Terrible. Worse than the NFL. They had the fewest sacks.
Andrew Luck just had, you know, he was on vacation back there. Just, you know.
Oh, yeah. Eight seconds to pass.
Having all day. Just
time,
you know,
after time.
Waiting for somebody to get open. And, like, your secondary is just not going to hold up if they got to hold up that long. And, it's just, I don't know. Like I said, the only thing I can say about the game is it was a team loss. And you know, credit the Colts. They played very well. They did what they needed to do. And the Bengals didn't.
And finally, the game that the referees handed to the Dallas Cowboys, potentially. Obviously, we had Detroit Lions lose to the Dallas Cowboys 24-20.
I'm going to try and not go there too much.
So we all know about the bad call, the pass interference flag that was picked up that led to a fourth down and an end of a drive for the Lions that would have, barring a turnover, resulted in at least 3 points and changed what the Dallas Cowboys would have done on the ensuing drive. Because remember, when they punted on that fourth down, it was a shanked punt that went just 10 yards, giving Dallas incredibly good field position. There was also a no call on a hold
on the following drive.
On the following drive as well, that the league has admitted to both of those calls being non-calls.
Today the league admitted to the Cowboys that they missed before that the second bad penalty situation for the Lions, the non-call and the hold. The play before that, apparently somebody was holding Witten from the Lions, and so the NFL apologized. Really, what they did is the NFL just sold Pete Morelli down the river at this point, and just put all the blame on them is for the outrage or the attention, at least, that's being paid to this. Because, of course, Barack Obama's in Michigan and talking about what a bad call it was today.
Well, the thing is, in every NFL game, there are going to be blown calls, there's going to be non-calls, there's going to be bad calls.
Sure.
But not only was this a playoff game, but these were calls, or non-calls as it were, that directly affected the outcome of this game. I mean, there would have been 3 points, maybe 7 points scored by the Lions on that drive if that PI had been upheld.
Yeah.
And then what does Dallas do after that? We don't know. Do they score? Do they not score? Who knows? But that basically cost the Lions at least 3 points, if not a win.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what's funny is
potential. At the very least, it cost them 3 points. At the most, it cost them the win.
Yeah, absolutely. What's funny is going into this game, I was almost depressed before the game started because I'm a Lions fan. I've been watching the Lions for a long time, and I've seen them lose a lot of games, and I just kind of know when to expect them to lose, and so I kind of was going into the game with that. But I even thought to myself, I was like, okay, I'm feeling like this now, and then once the game starts, I'm going to feel like they have a chance, and that they could win the game, and then somehow they're not going to win, and then I'm going to be even more disappointed afterwards.
Yeah, but you couldn't have predicted that this was how it would go down.
I absolutely didn't expect it to happen this way. So, I don't know, it's funny, I tweeted during the game that I'm just going to keep drinking and go back and watch the first half over again, and I probably should have done that as opposed to actually watching the second half. But anyway, that's really all that needs to be said.
Yeah, so that's wild card weekend. That's in the books. Obviously, this week we've got Baltimore at New England, Carolina at Seattle, Dallas at Green Bay, and Indianapolis at Denver. We will get to our discussions of these games and our picks a little later in the show. The other big story, of course, is the inevitable thing that happens after Week 16 comes to an end, and that's Black Monday, the day the coaches are fired. Very few surprises. No surprises, really, this year. Mark Trestman is out for the Chicago Bears. Rex Ryan, John Idzik out for...
No surprises for the firings.
I'll get to that. Like I said, with the firings, there were no surprises. Trestman and Phil Emery are out in Chicago. John Idzik, Rex Ryan out for the New York Jets. Mike Smith out for the Atlanta Falcons. They're still looking for a head coach that may or may not be interim coach Tony Sparano out in Oakland with the Raiders. 49ers, of course, Jim Harbaugh and the 49ers mutually parting ways. He going to the University of Michigan, so the Niners need a new head coach. We've got... Tampa Bay needs a new offensive coordinator. So does the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Washington needs a defensive coordinator. And then there's the Buffalo Bills. So in Doug Marrone, now former Buffalo Bills head coach, in Doug Marrone's very Marrone-friendly contract, in the event of new ownership, which there is now in Buffalo, he had 3 days where he could opt out of his contract and still receive $4 million that he was going to be paid to be the Bills head coach in 2015. He exercised that opt-out clause. He's getting $4 million no matter what. And the Buffalo Bills, too, are on the search for a head coach. And might I say, the Buffalo Bills so far seem to be conducting the most thorough search for a new head coach. So far, they are going to or have interviewed Hugh Jackson, Rex Ryan, Kyle Shanahan, Greg Roman, Terrell Austin, Mike Shanahan, Daryl Bevel, Adam Gase, Dan Quinn, Frank Reich, Jim Schwartz, Pep Hamilton, and Pat Shurmur.
Well, you can't blame them for not looking around.
Oh, they're going. They're overturning every stone possible there. It's pretty interesting. A lot of teams are interviewing both Mike and Kyle Shanahan. Of course, they both work together at Washington with Mike, the head coach, his son Kyle, the offensive coordinator. And there's some speculation that the two could reunite at a new location, whether that be Buffalo. San Francisco has also had interest in the pair. Oakland has been another rumored spot where those two could land, which is fascinating because Mike Shanahan has strongly negative feelings for the most part about the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders in particular are having quite the interesting, the most, I would say, unorthodox coaching search, in that they are really going after some retreads. Not just interim head coach Tony Sperano is interviewing for that job and Shanahan, but also Jack Del Rio, Eric Mangini.
Yes.
And Pat Shurmur.
Mangenius.
The common thread here through all of these openings, whether San Francisco, the only common thread, the only team that doesn't have a common thread is Chicago, and we'll get to that in a minute. But Buffalo, San Francisco, Atlanta, the Jets, and Oakland are all interviewing the same guys. It's all the Maroons, it's all the Todd Bowleses, Frank Reich, of course, he's the San Diego Chargers offensive coordinator. A lot of guys are talking to him. The Jets actually talked to Tom Cable. They're seeing if they can get Gary Kubiak to come in and interview. That'll be to be seen after the Ravens are done with their playoff run. They're also looking for a GM, so it's kind of interesting to see exactly what order they hire in,
right. Because
they are trying to interview GM candidates, of which they have fewer than you'd think, simultaneously while entertaining head coaching interviews. Chicago not doing the same thing. They want to have a GM in place before they hire a head coach.
I think that makes sense.
I don't understand why you'd bring in a head coach before you bring in a GM. You saw what happened when the Cleveland Browns have done this, and they did that with Rob Chudzinski, and that wasn't necessarily the best way to go about things.
I don't know.
They might not be interested in Rex Ryan, which bums me out, because I feel like Rex Ryan he's being connected so much to Atlanta, even though they just reconstructed their front office structure of power in a way that I would imagine does not appeal to Rex Ryan. Chicago just seems like a great fit. They need a defensive-minded coach, a guy who can get the players on his side.
I haven't heard his name linked to that job except for out of my mouth.
The only thing I've heard about
Rex
Ryan,
conjecture anyway, so,
is that they are not interested.
Yeah, it's just odd. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just not what they're looking for, I guess. I mean, maybe it's weird though, because it seems like from what I've heard about the local media people and all that, when they're talking about the job, that the Bears want to kind of get back to historical Bear football and good defense and all that.
Run the ball, and that's all very Rex Ryan.
And it's not that they can't find other guys to do that, but it just seemed like a good fit. And his ties here with his dad being the DC back in the Super Bowl days and all that. It seemed like there could be a warm reception here, and it could be a decent fit.
Oh, the Chicago media would love Rex
Ryan. Yeah, and he would like the media here, I'm sure, way better than the New York media.
Sure.
So, it just seemed like it would make a lot of sense. But, it's one of those things that, it's hard to tell, what the minutiae is and why things like that they're not even discussed, or why Chicago just isn't even interested in talking to him. So, hard to say, but it would have been cool to see that, I think. But
I think it would be a good fit, but if they don't want him, they don't want him.
Maybe
that could change depending on when they hire their GM and how the GM feels about Rex Ryan.
Sure.
Maybe that's something that could come up in the future. But by that point, Rex Ryan might be off the market. He's been heavily linked to the Atlanta Falcons. Nothing's done there yet, and especially with their restructuring with the GM Dimitroff now having control of the 53-man roster in the draft, while Scott Pioli, who they just brought in, is going to be the head of scouting.
Right.
Whether that's going to influence Rex Ryan's interest in that job in Atlanta, because he's going to want some level of control.
Sure.
And it's a level of control that he's used to. Meanwhile, you've got former Chicago Bears head coach Mark Trestman, one of the candidates for the open offensive coordinator job for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So he could be working under Lovie Smith and with Josh McCown.
He also interviewed, I guess, for the Jaguars' OC position.
Yes, he did.
After he left Tampa, and
they're so also very interested in.
That would be interesting.
Few other guys too.
I think he could. I think Trestman might be interested in that a little bit more if he likes
Blake Bortles.
The prospects of Blake Bortles, because
sure.
Obviously Josh McCown's further along. There's less to do there, unless he likes Glennon, maybe. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like anybody likes Glennon down there. But yeah, if he's a fan of Bortles, and you know they have the young receiving weapons there. They found a what looked like a decent running back in Denard this year. You know, there's plenty to build on there, and I could see him being attracted to that. But you know, yeah, we'll just have to see where things that the whole reunion, the whole two ex-Bear coaches working together, and Josh McCown, and it's like this reunion in Tampa. It just seems so weird to me. I don't even know what I think about it.
Yeah, the other thing that interests me is that New York Jets vacancy, because you know I'm really curious to see whether it goes head coach GM or GM head coach, and what that's going to mean. Because right now, you know, they're interviewing Doug Marrone, which some sources say he had a great pretty good interview. Some sources say that he had a bad interview. Dan Quinn, like I said, Tom Cable, which isn't a name coming up a lot with other coaching searches. Todd Bowles, Frank Reich, so. And then, of course, for the GM job, they've been talking to Seattle Director of Pro Personnel Trent Kirchner and former Buccaneers and Patriots executive John Robinson. Robinson looking like the front runner at this point for the GM job there. Hmm. So how that influences their coaching search has remained to be seen. So there's been a lot. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of moving parts, but a lot of these teams are just interviewing the same guys in the same coaching carousel. A lot of these hires, especially for these teams that are still in the playoffs, can't really come until after the postseason. So this is going to be an ongoing, fluid situation. I'm sure when we meet back here next Wednesday on the podcast, there's going to be new interviews, new stories, new people dropping out of races, new people.
Maybe
being
a hire.
Interviewed,
who knows?
So maybe some hires will materialize, especially these OC and DC vacancies. Washington, for example, fired defensive coordinator Jim Haslett, and
I thought they were close to signing someone. Maybe
they're interested in Wade Phillips, 49ers defensive backs coach Ed Donatell, and San Diego linebackers coach Joe Barry are the three linked to the Washington defensive coordinator job. And it looks like Scott McLaughlin is the front runner for GM there, but I believe Washington has yet to interview minority candidates as per the Rooney rule, so nothing has been finalized.
Oh, you
GM
do that for
there.
GMs too?
Yes,
I didn't realize the Rooney rule
yes.
applied there as well.
So there's a lot of moving parts. Like I said, a lot of these coaches are part of teams still in the playoffs, so it might take quite some time, maybe another month until all of these coaching vacancies
shake out, yeah.
And up to another month for some of these vacancies mm-hmm. to get filled. So of course we will try to keep up with everything that's going on, because it's insane.
It's swirling.
This is one of the weirdest hiring and interview periods with coaching vacancies that I can recall in some time, which is fitting because it's been such a weird NFL season. So you might as well have some weird stuff with the Atlanta front office maneuvering the Eagles.
Oh, and Brian Schottenheimer today, the announcement that he's going to Georgia. Or did
yes.
you mention that? Did I didn't hear you say that?
Yes, Brian Schottenheimer is going to Georgia to be the Georgia
which
offensive
sounds like
coordinator.
They kind of pushed him out, it sounded,
which,
from what I was reading. So.
Yeah, which makes things, which puts, again, Sam Bradford another rock in a hard place situation, because should the Rams want to keep him around, of course.
I feel like Sam Bradford's been in the league for 6 years now, and every year there's like a reason why you shouldn't expect anything out of him.
Well, he's between a rock and a hard place right now, because he has yet another offense he's going to have to learn, and yet another ACL he's going to have to rehab from. if of course the Rams are going to keep him around,
which there
are no guarantees there. Mike Tannenbaum went to Miami. They restructured their front office in a way that is so confusing as to who reports to whom that it just sounds like a muddy mess, and nothing good is going to come of it. Philadelphia Eagles also did some front office restructuring so that Chip Kelly can have control over the hiring of a new GM, and he is going to have control over entire player personnel, with Howie Roseman moving to a more of a contracts and team
VP
president
sort of thing.
Yeah, VP of football kind of situation. So there's been a lot of stuff happening in terms of coaching in front office, and it's all very confusing. But we're going to try to make sense of it every week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. So that's basically your primer.
The ever-evolving story.
That's basically your primer of what's going on with the coaching and GM searches around the league. And I'm sure a couple of things will come into clearer focus over the next 7 to 21 days. So with that, we're going to take a break.
Whew.
Yeah. And we'll take a break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we're going to come back and talk about the 4 playoff games coming up this weekend, the divisional round of the NFL playoffs this Saturday and Sunday. We're going to talk about what we think is going to happen and make our picks right after this break.
Stick around. The biggest if I ever live by, which is why I'm known as an underachiever. I just skip by. I needed to be inebriated to prevent me from getting shot. That's better than getting shot. That's a much more healthier ending. I'm running this race all by myself. My competition's in the selfie Olympics. Coming back with a vengeance and LV a vintage. Anybody got a problem with me winning this shit shall be offended. Prime. I'm in my permanent prime. The crown is on. That's how you determine a dime. Prime. I'm in my permanent prime. I ain't never falling off.
And we're back here on the F-Ball NFL podcast, and it's time to preview the 4 games scheduled for this weekend in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs.
Should be a good one.
This is not going to be minute picks because we've got 4 games instead of 16, and we can just take all the time that we need.
It's like 4-minute picks.
Exactly. We're going to do it chronologically because that's how we always do it, starting on Saturday at 4:35 p.m. Eastern Time, Baltimore Ravens at the New England Patriots. I'm going with the Baltimore Ravens in this game. I'm going with the Ravens because of their pass rush. Tom Brady, for all of his abilities as a quarterback, gets not just thrown off his game by consistent pressure. He gets frustrated, visibly frustrated. And the Baltimore Ravens are probably the best pass rush that he's going to be seeing or has seen all season long. The other thing, too, is that front 7 is a top 4 run-stopping unit. So if you can shut down the Patriots' run game, turn them into a one-dimensional passing offense, and then just tee off on Tom Brady, not just sacks, but hits and hurries and all the kinds of pressure there is in the world, you get a win. And when you couple that with Joe Flacco apparently back on that whole, you know, flawless in the playoffs – Joe mm-hmm. Flacco. You put all that together, and I don't think the Ravens are going to go into New England and be intimidated by this team. They've got a great pass rush that can get this done. They've got a great run defense that can get this done. Joe Flacco has proven that he's able to get this done. Their kicker, Justin Tucker, if they need him, he's clutch. He can get it done. So I am going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. I think that this matchup favors them very much.
I think you make a very strong argument. This should be just a really good game. I mean, this should be like...
Oh, this is going to be a really nice one to watch.
This should be a classic game.
Heck, I think at least 3, if not all 4 this weekend are going to be...
Yeah, I think you're right. It should be a good weekend in general. The Patriots defense has been pretty solid this year.
Of course, they've got Terrell Revis.
They've got
Revis
got a nice back
secondary.
There. They've had some good linebacker play. They're always pretty stout up front. The Ravens have come and gone. They still have the same deficiencies that they had last week, which was a weaker secondary, although a strong defense, strong run defense. And some pretty good pass rush.
Very good pass rush. Second best in the league.
Their secondary played so much better than I expect them to against Pittsburgh. What's that going to look like with Brady and his, I don't know. It kills me every year. It's like Brady's like cobbling together, what is still a successful passing game.
He's
not the same as he used to be.
Sure.
Absolutely not.
And the Ravens coverage linebackers who are going to be handing a lot of those shorter and intermediate routes are very good.
And the Patriots run the ball better than they used to.
The Ravens have allowed only five games of 100 yards rushing, and they haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher in 27 games.
I'm just saying that I see there's plenty of reasons to be on both of these teams. And I think you lay out a good argument for the Ravens. And, I mean, the other thing is that the Patriots, you know, they're always there. They're always tough to play in Foxborough.
Sure.
I think they've this is going to be one of those games that just really comes down, you know, to who makes the play in the fourth quarter when it's all online. Because I think it should be a good game. It should be a close game. I guess I'll go just to not sit here and say the same thing as you. I'll say the Patriots. I can see this game really turning out either way, and I'm just really looking forward to watching a good game.
The X factor to me in this game is Steve Smith. Steve Smith had a good four games to open the season with Baltimore. By after week six, he kind of fell off, didn't really, you know, have a large number of receiving yards and all of that, but he had 101 receiving yards against the Steelers. Granted, the Steelers, like the Ravens, have deficiencies in the secondary, but also, you know, Steve Smith is a player who plays with aggression. He plays with purpose, and now he has a reason to be aggressive, and that is to continue to win in the playoffs and to head to a Super Bowl. And when you have a motivated, fired up, completely focused Steve Smith, that's going to be pretty dangerous because you can't put Darrell Revis on him all the time. You have to keep in mind that Torrey Smith, while he catches 50% of what's thrown his way, he has 12 touchdowns, 11 in the regular season, one in the postseason.
He's a big play threat.
This is his career highest year in touchdowns by a long shot.
It helps having Steve Smith.
And it helps having Steve Smith.
It opens things up for him.
And Owen Daniels has been a really reliable tight end, stepping up for the injured Dennis Pitta. Mm-hmm. Justin Forsett has had a revelation of a running back season. Which clearly makes things a lot easier on Flacco, unlike last year where the offensive line was such that they couldn't run the ball and it was Flacco, Flacco, Flacco. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the Ravens have the more balanced offense. They have the better defense, especially up front, and a defense that is so good up front that can mitigate the weakness in the secondary. And the secondary is getting better. Safeties, Will Hill, Darian Stewart, they've really come on in the past few weeks and played extraordinarily good football. Right now it's just the corners that are kind of a question. And even Ladarius Webb's not really a question, obviously. He's gotten a lot better over the course of the season. He's a veteran. So you put it all together, and I feel like, while you can look at the Brady Belichick combination and Darrell Revis and say there's an advantage, and it's in Foxborough, you know, how many Super Bowls have the Patriots won lately? And the Ravens have gone through Foxborough to get to and then win a Super Bowl. I just feel like they have the more balanced offense. They have the better defense.
You're saying all good stuff here. And like I said, I think that you make a strong argument. I think that there's still a lot of legitimacy to the Belichick, the Brady, the Revis, and the Foxborough arguments.
I'm not saying they're illegitimate.
And that's why I said I think it should be a really great game. I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a fun one to watch.
And you're picking the Patriots.
And I'm going to pick the Patriots just to pick the Patriots.
Saturday night.
My pick really doesn't matter.
Saturday night, Carolina Panthers at the Seattle Seahawks, 8:15 p.m. Eastern Time. As we said earlier, the Carolina Panthers, they had a four-game winning streak to close out the season and win the NFC South Division, beat the Arizona Cardinals in Carolina last week. All of that seems impressive, except when you look at the quality of opponent. You know, the New Orleans, they didn't play anybody to get those four wins at the end. They played a Arizona Cardinals team with a depleted defense and a third-string quarterback. The Seattle Seahawks are, without a doubt, the toughest opponent that they are going to ever face this season. The Seahawks getting hot near the end of the season, looking like they have the capacity to repeat a Super Bowl champion, something that is difficult and rare nowadays. I think that Carolina has the chance to give them a little bit of a fight, but when you think about a banged up, injured, wincing Cam Newton trying to throw against that secondary, which is arguably the best in the NFL, when you think about the defensive pressure that they can put on, the ability that defense has to contain a running quarterback because they're up there going one-on-one with Russell Wilson in practice every day, you just look at all this and you look at the Carolina defense, which has gotten better, but again, hasn't faced a Marshawn Lynch and a Russell Wilson all season. You know, good job, good effort, Carolina Panthers, but going to Seattle and winning this game, it would be the massive upset. And we saw it with Seattle and Beastquake and all of that a few years ago with a team with a losing record winning a playoff game. But this is completely different in my eyes. I feel like the advantages are just so much in Seattle's favor. And that we just sort of have to look at the quality of opponent with this five-game win streak with Carolina and not just that it was a five-game win streak.
I haven't looked at the line information in Vegas.
It was 10.5 2 days ago.
I would assume as such. I would assume it's the biggest number on the board. It's got to be the easiest call on a straight-up call just because, I mean, even beyond the fact that they played NFC South opponents for the last couple of weeks, and Atlanta was, you know, a shell of themselves, and they played in week 17, and it was all, everything was on the line there, and, you know, Carolina just stomped on them, you know, and you know, I'm not trying to take any credit away from Carolina. They played their best football at the end of the season.
They did.
And definitely turned things around from where they were going earlier in the season.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. It's you know, they're playing this New Orleans team that is very, very much a disappointment for everybody this year. Atlanta just collapsed, and that division was the easiest to get out of. And then their gift was a home game against a team that not only was on a third quarterback, but they were down to like the third running back too, because Ellington was out, and or I guess they had Stephon Taylor was playing, and then but they were running with Kerryon Williams and like Marion Grice and like just these guys, you
yes,
know, and like
just these guys.
And Carolina was in it. Or, I'm sorry, Arizona was in it in the game. They had a chance to win. Like in the second half. I mean,
right.
It's not like they just
Carolina wasn't just
over
executing
these guys.
And executing.
Yeah,
and
no,
executing,
they had a hard
at
time at times, and their defense has played better. But to think that they're going to go to Seattle and deal with beast mode and
Russell Wilson, the Legion of Boom.
The thing about Russell Wilson is he's sneakily a hard quarterback to deal with because they don't have like this lights out passing game, and he's not, you know.
No, but he has a spectacular, accurate deep ball.
He's super accurate. He's very mobile. He's creative and in game.
And so smart. And he just sees the field.
And they have
a
powerful running game to go along with that.
Sure.
And not to mention the defense, you know. It's a whole different ball game. You know, credit Carolina for turning their things around to get that home game, and they got that playoff win. But here's your reward.
Next up, we head to Sunday, the early game, 1:05 p.m. Eastern Time. Dallas Cowboys at the Green Bay Packers, where it's expected to be around 16 degrees at kickoff. I find this game endlessly fascinating. Dallas Cowboys have been, perfect on the road this year.
Mm-hmm. Beating Seattle in Seattle.
They beat Seattle in Seattle. They've got Tony Romo, who, you know, like Cam Newton, banged up, got these injuries. He's fighting through them. Dallas's defense playing better than projected before the season began, but also helped out immensely by the fact that the offense has been playing so well. The offensive mm-hmm. line has been keeping Romo pretty protected, been blocking like crazy for DeMarco Murray, the league's leading rusher. But then you have, of course, Aaron Rodgers, MVP candidate, all of those weapons on his home field, had a week off, comfortable playing in the cold at Lambeau.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have the offensive weapons to separate out that Dallas secondary, which is considered their weakness, that no-name secondary, and take advantage of it. But at the same time, what exactly does Green Bay have in the secondary? They have HaHa Clinton-Dix, and what do they have going for them in the secondary that they can match with a Dez Bryant plus a Terrence Newman, Terrence Williams, and a Jason Witten,
mm-hmm.
plus the threat of DeMarco Murray running. So I feel like these teams are very well matched, especially because the passing season Romo has had, you could compare it a little bit to what Aaron Rodgers is doing. No one's chanting MVP for Tony Romo, which I guess if you're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers and J.J. Watt in that discussion, you got to throw Romo in a little bit. But I just feel like these teams are really well matched. They have a lot in common. You know, I would be more concerned about Dallas going on the road in the cold if I hadn't seen them go on the road all over the place this year
mm-hmm.
and win all the games.
True.
I'm going with Green Bay, but not confidently, because I think that Dallas – I think this is a really well-matched game. I could see shootout, but I can also see, you know, a lot of effective running with Eddie Lacy and DeMarco Murray. There's a lot to watch in this game. I'm going to go with Green Bay because it's Aaron Rodgers and it's in Lambeau. But I'm not convinced that's really what's going to happen. That's just going to be my pick.
Well, I think Dallas certainly, they had a surprising year.
They did.
You know, nobody expected them to do what they did this year. Nobody expected them to be this good. Nobody expected their defense to not be
a major liability
to the point where it would cause problems. This year, they weren't, you know, like a lockdown defense, but they were passable to the point where the offense, which was way more dominating.
The offense could help carry that defense pretty effectively.
And it was the offense was more dominating than people even expected. And, I mean, part of it was... They built a great offensive line, and DeMarco Murray stayed healthy.
Yes.
And,
yes, to both.
And, you know, we saw what he did this year. He's been amazing. And yeah, Romo's had a great year. Obviously, the offensive line has helped him as well. You're right. I think that they have the kind of weapons in the important positions there on offense to – actually, at all positions on offense – to be able to go up and take advantage of a less than stellar Green Bay D. They're not terrible, but they're one that can be taken advantage of. And if they play – a talented offense like this, you know, I can see the Cowboys having success moving the ball.
Yes.
Ultimately, I see this as kind of a high scoring
shootout kind of situation.
Even though it's going to be cold, you know what I mean?
It's
cold.
Well, it's going to be cold and clear. It's not going to be cold and humid.
Right.
Cold and
As long as everybody's
damp.
Hands aren't too numb, you know, they should be able to make things happen as you'd expect. So, but I don't know that they're going to be able to do it, and I feel less concerned about picking the Packers than you do.
Yeah.
And it's mainly how good this Packer team has looked this year at times, and I think this will be one of those times on this stage with a week rest.
But you never know what can happen after the bye. That might be, you know, some teams don't respond well to
that
week
off. I
know
that some teams don't respond well, but when this team is not going to be that one. And Rodgers is – I love the argument of Rodgers versus J.J. Watt in the MVP because I think that J.J. Watt's had just a ridiculous year, and he absolutely deserves to be in the conversation. But I think the obvious foil for his pursuit of the MVP is Rodgers, just because he's that – you know, it's classic. The
right, and
one of the best teams. He's the quarterback.
Led them to the playoffs and potentially the Super Bowl.
He's had a crazy good year, and it's – and I think that it can't be understated that a big factor to that has been the development of the run game with cheese mode. Don't forget about cheese mode.
Cheese mode.
Cheese
Eddie
mode.
Lacy.
Eddie Lacy has been quite a surprise this year as far as just how good he's gotten. And so I think they have every bit the run game. You know, DeMarco Murray's got the stats, I think, on the air, but I think Lacy is I'd say in a one-game situation, he's as effective.
Well, and Rodgers has more
to the game plan.
Dez Bryant types to throw to. You know what I mean? Like, you got Romo's got Dez Bryant who's going to fight for every catch. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers got a couple of guys like that.
Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and even the younger guy, Davante Adams. He's definitely got some weaponry. They just have a solid offense, and they're led by this guy who's been there and done it before, and he's
right.
He's in the prime of his career, playing a home game with a week rest. I don't know. I see the Packers winning this game. I think it should be a good game. I think there's going to be a lot of points.
Is still bothering Aaron Rodgers, though. He hadn't been practicing.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine. It's just worth noting that calf...
There's no need for Aaron Rodgers to practice.
That's true. But just keep in mind that calf is still causing
him
some
trouble. Look a little rusty for half a quarter.
He might not have the same mobility as sometimes he has when his calf is fine. So that's something also to keep
in mind. Sure. No, absolutely.
Green Bay, but just reticently.
That is an underrated part of his game is his mobility. But yeah, I'm just saying I think it should be a good game. I think the teams do match up well just in this situation. With Rodgers, that just tips it for me, and I think that, especially them being at home, I think that I'm much more confident in picking Green Bay than you apparently are.
And finally, at 3:40 p.m. Eastern Time, Indianapolis Colts at the Denver Broncos. I'm going with the Denver Broncos here just because the Indianapolis offense, they get off to slow starts. Andrew Luck is dealing with the most dropped passes that any quarterback has dealt with all year. I just don't see Peyton Manning dealing with that many dropped passes. He has a lot of trust, great rapport with his receivers. They wouldn't dare let him down in a situation like this because you never want to be on Peyton Manning's bad side. You know, there is that precedent when Peyton Manning gets the week of rest, when he gets the bye, sometimes he doesn't come out and play as well. But I'm not too concerned about that against the Indianapolis Colts. They don't have that great of a defense. They were effective last week against Andy Dalton because they can blitz. But when you blitz against Peyton Manning, you get in trouble. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to just blitz and blitz and blitz like they did last week and hope that Peyton Manning gets confused or flustered because he can read a blitz like better than any other quarterback in the league. So you get a slow start, you get a few drops for Indianapolis, and Denver's just going to stomp all over them. They're going to take advantage of every mistake that Indianapolis makes, and I'm not saying it's not going to be an interesting game. I love watching Andrew Luck play. He's going to make some really great plays, some really smart decisions, but ultimately this is Peyton Manning's day. This is the Broncos' day.
All right, you may be right.
You're going with the Colts? That's crazy.
I don't know if I'm – I don't know. I'm still kind of working on this. And
CJ Anderson, as compared to Boom Heron?
Maybe
are you
serious? Maybe I need to talk through this a little bit.
CJ Anderson or Boom Heron?
To actually figure out what I want to pick. No, I think CJ Anderson. I think the Broncos should be able to attack the Colts the way the Bengals should have. You know what I mean? They obviously have a lot better – you know, quarterback taking care of that situation, that task, we'll say. And it's, you know, it's in Denver. I think this is an extremely tough game for the Colts. But I don't know. I feel like their defense can, you know, there's a couple playmakers on there that can make some plays. They can turn some things. And Andrew Luck, you know, it's hard to say enough good about this kid. God, you got to get this kid some help. Get him some weapons, and they're really going to be tough to deal with.
This is what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying, like, okay, so Dan Heron or
CJ. Let me get to it.
All right.
I feel like there's chinks in the armor with Denver, and I think we've seen, well, let's say maybe not even chinks. There's a little rust on it or something, and maybe the bye week helps. I think this might be a situation where the bye week doesn't, and they're almost a little disjointed at this point.
I don't see that.
I have no proof that they are disjointed in any way. I felt like they struggled quite a bit down the stretch of the season. And losing in Cincinnati is a big part of that, to the second to last week of the season. They looked, I don't know, off a little bit in that game. And they looked off on a few weeks in December. And it's nothing I expected to see. It made me start to doubt whether I thought that they could repeat and go back to the, or at least repeat as a Super Bowl appearance. Maybe they'll win this game, obviously, and they could easily lose the next week, you know, depending on how that goes too. But I don't know. I think the Broncos are vulnerable, and I think the Colts might be able to take advantage of the thing, and they still have that history of being able to win games that you don't expect them to. Although most of those have happened in Indy, I'll give you that.
So, Boom Heron or CJ Anderson?
As far as who I think is a better player right now?
Who you got as a running back?
If I got to pick one of the
two?
Who are
you pointing the arrow towards?
CJ Anderson is probably a little better, although I don't think he's done that much either.
Yes, he has. You've not been paying attention to CJ Anderson.
No, I have. He's only had like a half a season.
Same with Boom Heron.
Couple months.
Same with Boom Heron.
Boom Heron's done this for. He's been in the league for a few years.
He has not been a starting running back until the second half of this season, Brian. He was a special teamer. Okay, T.Y. Hilton or Demaryius Thomas?
I mean, Demaryius is obviously the better receiver.
Okay, then how
T.Y.'s got skills though.
Okay, Reggie Wayne or Emmanuel Sanders? Dante Moncrief for Emmanuel Sanders.
That's E-Man.
Let's see. Julius Thomas or Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen?
I don't know. Julius Thomas, I think, has been a lot banged up this year, and he hasn't had
the touchdowns, but he's got some good catches.
Yeah, he's had some good catches, but he just hasn't had the big year like I expected after what he did last year. You know what I mean?
Denver's offensive line.
Maybe some of that was just some of his passes going to Emmanuel Sanders. I don't know.
Denver's offensive line versus Indy's offensive line.
Yeah,
Denver.
Denver's got a better offensive line.
Peyton's been sacked the least amount of any quarterback in the NFL this season. Denver's pass rush versus Indy's pass rush. Remember, one's got Von Miller.
Yeah.
He's had a good season.
Honestly, I think that's kind of a push.
Denver's secondary versus Indy's secondary.
That's probably Denver.
Special teams, Denver or Indy? I'm going with Indy because Josh Cribbs looks pretty good out there.
Yeah, I don't know.
And finally, Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck?
You know, frankly, Peyton Manning obviously is Peyton Manning. He's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game.
Yeah.
Certainly one of the best quarterbacks of my lifetime.
Yes.
I don't know. I think this could be one of those games like 10 years from now. Where, you know, it's like the passing of the torch, you know, Andrew Luck. I don't know. One of these days, Peyton Manning is not going to be playing anymore. And Andrew Luck's going to probably be one of the best quarterbacks in the game, if not the best.
Sure.
And, this could be a stepping stone.
I'm not saying that the Colts are a bad team. I'm just saying that too much for me just tips in Denver's favor that I can't pick the Colts here, especially when you account for all the dropped passes on top of all of it.
My main point is that this Denver team is who they are. They're damn good. They went to the Super Bowl last year, although they did fall off of their regular season pace somewhat. They didn't have quite a successful year as an offense as they did in 2013. But it's. I just feel like that, you know, that there's something, some maybe non-tangible thing happening here that I don't quite know what it is.
Okay.
But there's something that's got me worried about Denver.
So Brian is picking the Colts on intangibles.
I'm going to go intangibles, Colts.
Okay. Well, then that wraps up our preview and our picks for the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. I hope you enjoyed our analysis. Please don't do anything with our picks. They're terrible.
Hey, I don't care. If you're dumb enough to take my gut feeling on maybe the Broncos are going to somehow lose this game to the Colts and you want to put money on the Colts, go right ahead. You're grown people and you can do that. So just don't get mad at me afterwards if it doesn't happen.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, the F-Ball NFL podcast. We're going to send this thing on home, so stay tuned.
You vet, you start to feel like Hardaway with that UTEP two-step. They come in the league like AI with their new look and that crossover move, and they make that old shit seem useless. But I'm balling. I can afford to hire somebody to try to break all of their legs like Tanya Harding.
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, just in time to say au revoir to all of you. And before we do that, of course, it's time to read from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts.
Yes.
I've got five facts for you today.
You've got five facts today?
From page 208.
I'm sure they'll all make sense in the order that they're read.
As a quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks, Dave Krieg threw five touchdown passes. Is it Krieg or Craig?
Dave Craig.
Craig?
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it's spelled. No. Dave Craig threw five touchdown passes in one game three times during his career, once in 1984, once in 1985, and once in 1988.
Okay.
Good for him. Rich Gannon of the Oakland Raiders completed more passes than any other NFL quarterback in 2002. Gannon completed 418 of 618 passes that season.
Yes, the year of Gannon.
That's pretty good. Only 200 incompletions. That's pretty
good. He was really good that year. He was a pretty solid quarterback, but he was really good that year.
QB, we're going QB here, not quarterback. QB Roger Staubach of the Dallas Cowboys was nicknamed Roger the Dodger because of his ability to make tacklers miss him.
Oh.
Now we go back to the full word here, quarterback. Quarterback Len Dawson spent five seasons in the NFL with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns before jumping to the American Football League to play for the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right.
And finally, Marcus Allen, the great NFL running back, was a quarterback and defensive back while in high school in California.
Outstanding.
So well, those are our
facts with quotation marks.
Those are our quote-unquote facts for this week. If any of those prove to be untrue, please let us know on Twitter, and you'll be handsomely rewarded with our praise and
with
maybe
recognition.
Maybe a special gift. So that wraps up the divisional round episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast for this week.
It's good to be back, in the new year.
Good to be back in the new year, 2015. Nice
first podcast
odd number,
of the new year.
Which is my favorite. I'm Andrea Hengst, by the way. I'm the AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can go to BleacherReport.com, find all of my work. You can also download the TeamStream app, and you can add me as one of your favorite writers so you don't miss any of my columns there. You can also just do a quick little Google search to find my sports writer profile at Bleacher Report, and you can bookmark that, or you can find all of my articles linked to my Facebook writer page, which is facebook.com/ahengstnfl. I am also a fantasy football contributor at Pro Football Focus. That's profootballfocus.com. Season's over. You don't have to pay for fantasy gold right now, so go do some research and get ready for next season. And you can find me on Twitter at @fball_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea. And on occasion you can hear me nationally on Fox Sports Radio. Those guys like to have me on talk about the AFC North.
You've been making your way around the radio waves.
Yeah, I have. So you never know where I might pop up.
You get your
spot pay
attention in Ohio that you do on the ESPN.
Yes, ESPN Ashtabula every Thursday. And on occasion with Fox Sports Radio.
And the Bleacher Report.
Yeah. XM, Sirius XM. So
yeah, she's...
I'm all over the place.
She's a busy gal. She can be found in lots of places, and I'm most easily found in one. That's on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the first F-Ball NFL podcast of the new year. Please enjoy the 4 playoff games this weekend. We're coming ever closer to a time where there is not going to be any football played and it's going to be sad. So revel in the enjoyment of all 4 of these games, even if the team you root for doesn't happen to win, because it's the last time you'll see them and you've got to enjoy every last moment.
Squeeze it.
And we'll be back next Wednesday to get ready for the AFC and NFC championship.
Oh,
games,
championship Sunday.
Which is always the greatest day of the year.
Yes.
So we'll be back next week. Stay tuned. And again, thanks for joining us. And
enjoy the playoffs.
Enjoy the playoffs.
Later.
Oh, he only been so quiet because he's been spending that lightest money. Man, these people spend too much time predicting what's on your mind up until the time you non-existent. In the midst of all my success and my failures, I'm just out here struggling. Guess that's what happens in rapping when you and your mother prime. Prime.